accession number 21279, reel 2.
So you were telling me about the Riper.
Yes, it was a very clever device, I thought. It was like a mock-up of a tank turret, a skeleton tank turret, and inside was using the same sort of triggers, but the triggers were operating an air rifle. And obviously you couldn't fire a big gun in an enclosed space in any way at all. But this accurately, well, if you were accurate, you could hit a model tank on the model deserts scene with this thing, rolling, yawing and pitching, hence its name. And the thing was rocking about because a tank rolling over rough country is rather like a ship in rough seas. So I found that very interesting
as
well.
So it was an air rifle you were actually firing?
Well, it was operating this, except instead of, you know, nestling with a small air rifle, you pull the gentle or squeeze the trigger of what would be more like the trigger in the tank gun.
Yeah.
Yes, very interesting.
So did that give, I mean, was that as a good representation of what you were going to meet?
Yes, I think so. Yes. And, I mean, obviously, in a war, you weren't going to shoot under ideal conditions, you know, but... So I thought it was clever and useful training.
Yeah. So, did you do grenades and any other weapons?
Yes. I think we only fired or used hand grenades on one occasion in the tanks. And it was a solemn sort of occasion because, of course, if anyone clowns around trying to prime a grenade, I mean, they can blow themselves up quite easily. But I think the grenades there had a fuse, a 7-second fuse, and later on, I was taught to use 5-seconds grenades, which 2 seconds doesn't seem much difference, but it means you have to get rid of the thing smartly, and you've got to know where you're throwing it. You don't want it bouncing back from a tree. Anyway, there was that, but it was mainly rifle shooting or revolver shooting, and, well... We were getting fitter all the time. We were getting used to the army, and I think it was very good early training.
Did you do any tactics and field training?
Very, very little. No, I later on there was more of it because when I changed direction. Then I was really, when on the ground, acting as an infantryman. Whereas, had I stayed in the tanks, and there were a nice crowd, and I found it very, very interesting, but I had the opportunity to do something else. No, not shoots, tactical exercises without troops that we did later on, the sort of things that... people do it not to.
Yes, yeah. So, you stayed with the training regiment for how long, do you think?
I think it wasn't long after the 12-week training, rather. And then we were posted to various regiments, and I don't know how many of us from the training regiment went to the Fife and Four for yeomanry. I'd never heard of the regiment then. It was a Scottish regiment. It was an armoured regiment. It was a yeomanry regiment, but I suppose we were obviously a minority in the Scottish regiment. Probably about 20% were English, I guess.
Right. And where did you join them?
Well, I've been trying to think. It was a hutted camp in the grounds of a big stately home in Northumberland. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know, I'm afraid, the name of the stately home. I hadn't too much time, and certainly we didn't get any conducted tours and produced a National Trust badge.
Yeah. Right, so you now had your own regiment. Did that feel good?
Yes.
So what did they tell you about the 5 and 4 foot? Did you get any sort of, did they give you information or?
No, there was no induction. And I think, in a way, that would have been very useful, particularly because it's there for the only time in my life when I experienced, I was a minority, a big minority, but there was a corporal who said quite early on, "What are you doing in our regiment?" And it was said very offensively. And anyway, I'm pleased that I remembered, that I was moved to say, to stiffen you. And they all laughed, of course, and thinking I was joking, I suppose. And he was the only hostile Scotsman I've ever met. And I think I attempted to tell him later on that I was born in Cumberland, and for part of the time, the Kingdom of Cumbria reached up to the Firth of Forth. And there were other times when the Scots ruled my part of Cumberland. So, you know, who is a Scot and who is an Englishman? But anyway, he wasn't open to reason. But his twin brother, a trooper, was, like the other Scots, an excellent man. And in fact, he was picking on me in a silly way. And when we were moving to from Catterick to from the camp that I was in Northumberland, we were taken to Westmorland to walk up tank ranges, and we were only in my carriage there was the 30 men of the reconnaissance troop which I was posted to, and as our luggage was dumped on the platform out in the wilds of Westmorland, this corporal said, I won't attempt to ape his accent, but what he said was, not very kindly, "We'll need somebody to guard the luggage." And I said, "Yes, I know who it'll be." And he said, "Bloody right, it's you." So I was sent to the other end of the platform. Nobody else about except 30-odd soldiers. We knew each other. And as I trudged up there, I was delighted to find the rest of the recce troop, bar the corporal, they went up with me. So he was left on his own. So that was that.
So what was the accommodation like in Northumberland? What were you in?
Well, Nissen huts tucked amongst the trees. And we had... we could hear rats scurrying between the corrugated sheets. And we must have been kept busy, because I remember feeling my face was being touched during the night, and I just brushed. I didn't hit anything, but it was a rat, because we had to fold... the army loves these great neatness, and it's the only way to run an army. Anyway, the greatcoat had to be folded just behind each bed, the buttons at the front, not shining as they were made to shine in my next unit. And I'm not sneering at the Fife and Forfers in any way. They believed in muck and efficiency. And I think efficiency is the thing. And the spit and polish of, dare I say it, the guards, no, is misplaced energy. But anyway, this rat that had went across my face, it had bitten a hole in my greatcoat to nibble at some cigarettes in the pocket and ruined it. But it should have put me off smoking then. But anyway, it was our free time. We were so far in the country that, well, I used to wander around with a, you know, a couple of friends, and it was very interesting. Red squirrels and coming across a nest of an owl's nest, and big a nuisance, but we thought we were helping the little owlets to have flying lessons. The parent birds, they used to swoop down on us to begin with, but they got used to us, and they knew that we were not going to harm the three young birds. And that was it. The only other thing I can remember of that particular camp, we heard there was an airfield 7 miles away, and memories, even names, are coming back now. Wilf Taylor, he said, what about going off at 5 o'clock when we were off duty, walking to this airfield, and we'll go to their naffy. We walked to 7 miles, and the RAF guards would not let us in. So, without any food, we had to walk another 7 miles back, so we must have been pretty fit by then. But it should have put me off the RAF. But anyway.
Yeah. So when you were at Catterick and in Northumberland, I mean, there was no social life in Northumberland. Did you? I mean, you had time off. Did you go down to the local pub? Or?
Yes. I'd missed out another part where there was, quite lively social life. We were moved to near the football ground in Newcastle, and we were billeted.
Just after Northumberland, was it? So you went to Northumberland and then Westmorland. Were you actually stationed at Westmorland?
Only for a period of a couple of months, I think.
Right.
The every regiment of our brigade went for a tank shoot, and I think they probably only spent 10 days or a fortnight there. But our reconnaissance troop, we were asked to stop on. Well, they don't ask you in the army, they tell you. And it was great, because we had Bren gun carriers, and our job was to set up the wood and canvas tank targets, and then, that done, and repair those that were shot up. We had then to watch the time very carefully and to go back to or find big bunkers. We knew the position from the maps, and we're to hide in there. We're to get in there time when the tank guns and sometimes field artillery guns shot up these targets. Mm. But there was one occasion when our Bren carrier, with three men in it, it got stuck, and we could not move the thing. We must have got away from rocky ground and rather swampy ground, and it was really bogged down. So time was running out, and time was most important. So we got a radio message back to base and said that we would have to go to one of these bunkers on foot. So obviously it was going to take us longer. Would they delay the shoot? So they did, and we got into a bunker. And when we went back to see the Bren gun carrier, and this must have been a deliberate act, One of the gunners had put a solid shot right through the thing, and it had gone through the, an armoured, a Bren gun carrier doesn't count as an armoured vehicle, although it has got thin armour. It'll only withstand small stuff. Any light field gun, you know, do this. And it went through the front, and there's also, from the driving position, there's another line of, it's not counted as an armoured vehicle, but it is armour, and it had gone through there, and it had shattered the radio set, the 19 radio set, and we weren't able to start the thing. It must have damaged the engine as well. But they must have seen what they were doing. So it was just a bit of fun, you see.
Yeah, yeah. So, what sort of tanks were they using then?
Well, I'm a bit vague. I think they had Shermans, and I think the one before that was the Ram. And that had a fixed gun, I think, on the side of the hull rather than in a turret. So in a way, it was more of a self-propelled gun. You'd got to turn the vehicle round. And the other British tanks, I'm not sure, because the ones we had in exercise, when I was in the 60th Training Regiment, they were Matildas and Valentines. I used the Valentines, but this was an obsolete tank. And when we joined the Fifes, I forget, first of the C class tanks, whether it was a Crusader or not, I'm vague. I know all sorts of flying machines, British and German, but no, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed that I don't know that.
Yeah. So you did your tank driver training, though? You did it driving, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And what did you do that in?
That was, before that, it was really the tracked thing, getting used to that. So it was the Lloyd carrier, and that had two sticks to control it, like most armoured vehicles. The Bren gun carrier had a little wheel. But the tanks that I used, they just had the two sticks. And in fact, I thought that all the German tanks had sticks, except I understand that the Royal Tiger, that was one that was, one of the type used at Arnhem, they had wheels instead of the things. But anyway, that's just a little earlier tank man's aside. It doesn't matter.
So you were at Westmorland for a couple of months, were you?
Yes. Yeah. And that was fine because it allowed me to get a weekend leave, and my grandparents was still in Cumberland, so I was able to see them there. Yeah, but it was very enjoyable because there was the they're not the Cumbrian Hills; there were the Westmorland Hills in that time. But very nice country.
Yeah, yeah. And then you went where in Westmorland?
That's it. From there, we moved to Newcastle, and I was in the garage near the football ground, and it had been taken over. There were no vehicles of any kind there, but the concrete floor was quite cold. And then we moved from there across the river to Gateshead, and the memory of Gateshead is we were sharing... meaning other soldiers from the armoured brigade. There was the Inniskilling Dragoon Guards, and by then our troop was attached to them, so strictly speaking, I was in the Skilling Dragoon Guards for that time. And a thieving Irishman stole my wallet that had all of a ten shilling note in it. This was my contribution to his drinking on, his Saint's Day. And they were all right. So we shared this school, and then there was a lot of social life there, which meant getting out. We went to Newcastle rather than Gateshead. There's more life there, and it was interesting. I remember seeing people on the quayside there. I remember an escapologist who was asking people to tie or fasten him up in chains and check him over into the water. And a couple of sailors, they fixed him up in chains, and I can see the smirks as they tossed him over the side. And he did get into difficulties, so that he was pulled out. I forget now who did it. And whether he gave up his profession then and adopted something safer, more sensible. But
what sort of training were you doing in Newcastle and Gateshead?
Well, I think it was radio school. But a bigger impression than whatever training was the fact that on one particular Sunday, we were all drafted to go on church parade and to the cathedral there. And I was sitting just viewing the pretty beams of light coming through the windows there, and I was appalled to see smoke being caught in these sunbeams. And this was spotted by an NCO, and really I can understand him being upset, the fact that some soldier was smoking in a cathedral. But anyway, I still recall, it was, who the FNL is smoking here? So anyway, whether they found out, certainly wasn't me. And it must have been some sort of schoolroom thing, because there were no sort of tank trips. But I got larking about, I suppose. I picked up pneumonia there. So I went to, I was taken to the general hospital there, and I spent a couple of weeks there, and it was enjoyable, because the one of the doctors who dealt with me, he said, in the tanks, my brother is in the tanks, and he was in the 60th Training Regiment. So I knew of his brother, and he was in my hut. And I was well treated. He made sure this. In fact, I think I was in a private ward. Mm. So, when I was ready to be discharged, I think he asked my advice. Do you think you're ready to go? This was on a Friday or something. Oh, would you rather wait until Monday, and then you'll be better then, won't you? So I waited until Monday. But then I was given a bus, a railway pass to go to York, because I had to report to a tented camp on the Wolds, near Moulton, I think. But anyway, the railhead was York. And how I was going to get my voucher only took me to York. And I wasn't sure whether they'd be sending me a truck. The army can be a little bit careless at times, particularly with just troopers. But I was pleased to notice outside the railway station that the Pfeifenforfer insignia on a car, a Humber car, outside the station. So I thought, that's the colonel's place. And I knew the driver, and he wasn't there then. But anyway, I waited around. I didn't bother going in to try and get a sandwich. What was it, char and wad? It was the expression at the time. I thought, well, if I can see the driver, I might be able to say, any chance, if I throw a nice salute, getting a lift, you know, to the camp. So the driver came along, as he ought to, in good time, and I said, this is, I'm just out of hospital, and being a conscientious soldier, as you will know, he was in my hut. It would be vulgar to tell you what he did. Well, I'd better tell you this anyway, and you can cut it out if you wish. He was the bugler for the regiment, as well as the really the driver for the colonel. And most of the people then, they slept in shirt and vest if the weather was cold, and underpants. He, I can well recall, in this this Nissen hut set in the woods. In fact, there were pine woods, but I can remember being impressed earlier on by seeing the light going through. And in fact, this is one of the few times, well, I must have a poetical streak somewhere, and I could see the sunbeams coming through, and I thought, aren't I jolly lucky to be here in this rural site? But it was blighted by this driver, because somebody shouted, Cyril, he was another Cyril, you'd better get your bugle ready, you know, and mention the time. Anyway, this fellow used to get out, and he spoiled the scene. Where I'd stood to watch the sunbeams on certain times, he then stood at the open doorway, urinated without going outside, and then he, no question of going off to wash his hands or anything like that, he picked up his bugle and blew reveille and then got back to bed. So that's that. Really, my mother was right, it's a coarsening place, the army. But
did you get a lift back to camp?
Oh, yes. The colonel came along, and the driver had a word with him first and said, you know, this chap's just come out of hospital and he's very keen to get back to the regiment, as I was. Mm. But the colonel allowed me to sit in the back, so he sat in the front alongside the driver. So I duly got back, or rather got to this camp. And the bell tents, they were brailed up, and it was like a deserted camp, because everybody was out on exercises, bar a few staff. So I was told that was going to be my tent. And before, it must have been after I'd been taken into hospital, my ground sheet was stolen, and I had to put C. Williams 7962313 on the thing. So the 12 ground sheets were fanning out from the central pole, the bell tent. So I thought, well, there's nothing much to do. I'll just have a look at these ground sheets, just in the off chance. I found mine. So I thought, right, I will wait. So I waited somewhat balefully, and they came back, and some of them knew me, but I didn't know this chap who plonked himself down on this ground sheet. He looked a real scruffy individual, and I waited. I said, "This your place?" So, yeah. You know, what's it to you, or something like that. Well, I said, that is my ground sheet.
Cyril Williams, End of Reel 2.